more.
Hi, friends. Thank you so much for joining us for this special, special podcast. I'm excited because this is one of the most fun and funny, but also God-honoring and passionate people that I know. And I'm really, really honored and excited to have the wonderful comedian Brad Stein with me today.
Well,
thank you, Brad.
I certainly have fooled you. I'll tell you that. If you believe all that about me, I have done my job. But thank you for that wonderful introduction. Love being with you and excited to see what God might have us talk about.
Yes.
And hopefully in a way that is of some redemptive quality to somebody. Maybe not. Maybe the wheels will come off. That's normally what happens when I'm in the room. But thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm really, really glad that you're here. And we know each other from a long time ago. We were just talking about it. Early days, probably on the road for me, probably late 90s,
right.
I think, probably, like a festival that we met in a green room.
Yep.
Somewhere in the U.S.
That's when your brothers were your backup singers before they became so famous. Prior to that, she was in Cirque du Soleil. I don't know if you know that.
That would be cool, but not true.
Yeah, and that's something she rarely talks about. Because it's just, you know, that was another
all
world.
The things that I can do that people don't know.
She was amazing. But we met briefly then, and you were the top dog, if we can use that word.
Oh, thank you.
In Christendom, and your brothers were there, and then of course we re-met with a little bit more opportunity to talk and get to know each other on a film set. So that's been we've had quite a journey together and separate, but we keep once in a while crossing paths.
I know, and then we're going to the same church now. I ran into you at Easter at our church here in Franklin, so it's just really sweet.
Yeah,
Nashville's kind of what I call a big small town.
It is.
You know?
It is, and it's as it should be.
Yeah.
Because I think community is so important in the human experience, and it's been so distorted by phones and iPads and everything. And it's like anything. There's a threat of positive goodness with technology.
Yep.
It can do things that you could never. I mean, you literally have the Library of Congress.
The world at your fingertips.
You know, I need
it's
to
true.
Know about something. So,
oh, I know.
And you get this research. So in that regard, I love that as a comic because I'm curious about things. What is that? Where did that come from?
Yes.
But it becomes something where you believe you're in relationship and it's all a facade.
No.
And it's killing people, and they don't understand. It's so many kids, especially, who will know nothing else.
Yes,
don't know what relationship is, and they think they do because somebody liked me.
Yeah,
somebody gave me a positive thing, and it's all fraudulent. So once again, something beautiful the enemy will use to destroy. But you know, you can redeem even technology if you're just wise.
Wisdom is the word.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to be real careful. And I also think sometimes we can hide behind our phones
too.
We can be with people, but it's kind of, I have my notes here. So this is why I've got my phone like sitting on
my
lap.
Yes.
That would take a heck of a lot more like planning.
I still use
if
I
was,
phone. I don't know if you're aware of that. That's all I have because I don't, you know, I don't want to be secular.
Some because
folks.
He's
I'm
closer
holy.
To God than
I'm
any of the rest of us.
I even take my shoes off every time I use the phone because I'm on holy ground.
Yes. So, but yeah, I think we can hide behind, you know, the phone and it's like a little safety net. And I think we just got to put it away at the dinner table. We got to put it away from us when we're getting together with people. We got to actually have this.
Yes. Where it's most telling to me is watching the kids in
a
setting where they're together.
Yeah.
There's four of them sitting next to each other, face to face, flesh to flesh. And they're doing this. It's they're there. The person being present with them. These guys will be there all day long.
Yes.
But this is your chance to flesh to flesh. And it almost doesn't even teach you skills of interacting with someone. Learning how to just embrace the stranger.
Yes. Look them in the eye.
To find a way to connect to a human being. Because it can be intimidating.
Yes.
It can be. But if you're not given tools.
Yeah.
And you're given this sort of facade where there is no, I mean, somebody can bully you on the internet.
Oh,
I mean, that's what breaks my heart. I mean, used to be bullying's always been around. You went to school, somebody could be evil to you.
Yeah.
At least you can go home and kind of like,
yes.
Now they follow you into your room.
I know.
Your home. There's nowhere to escape. It's why kids are struggling so much.
Yes.
Because they have no place to go and get respite from darkness.
So. As
I'm not
parents,
trying to jump into this.
No, it's so good. It's so good. And we did a wonderful podcast. My mom and I, she was bringing the wonderful content. let me say that. But on screen time, on just be as parents being so vigilant about making sure that our kids are protected and that we're limiting that time. Yeah. Like we're using it right when we need to in a pinch. You know, our kids, we definitely use it when we need to. But trying to limit it so they can go outside, they can play, they can be at the park, they can run around, they can be barefoot, they can have
it is a have the real life. It is a tightrope because you know, you can't be a Luddite when it comes to technology.
Right.
You have to.
You actually have to.
You know, this is the season we're in.
Yes.
You know, if it was 200 years ago, they might have had different parameters.
Yep.
That's like, put that book down.
Yes.
We got people here. Put that and blow out that candle immediately. Don't waste candles. But, you know, so I don't want to believe that there's something that can't be utilized correctly.
Right. But it's not evil just because it's a fun, but it's how we use it.
Like I said,
and how often.
I'm a comedian. And my comedy for so long has dealt with the culture. That's what I'm about. Well, so I need to have access to information so I can understand what I'm talking about and dealing with. Now, I try to turn it into humor and I try to find a way to deliver it in a system that is interesting to folks. See, the great thing about comedy, all human beings have presuppositional worldviews. You know, for those people who think, oh, fills me with the church, I'm telling you, if we don't have pastors start teaching philosophy and worldview and understanding how to inculcate your faith into the real world, we're going to continue to crumble because there should be a sophistication to Christianity that is our heritage that is lost in American Christianity. And I always say American Christianity because that's where I'm from. This is my territory.
Mm-hmm.
If I was in China, we'd be having another discussion. If
right.
I was in North Korea, we'd be hiding somewhere having the discussion like this. If I was in Iran, which is one of the biggest churches growth in the world right now, is in Iran. So, you know, but it's a different discussion based on a culture that they have to deal with, but not here. So here's the first nation in human history built on a creed, first nation in human history where people weren't allowed to get off the boat until they signed a compact saying, we will honor God, we will allow religious freedom and whatever. And so here comes the Mayflower Compact, they come on board and couldn't have imagined the greatest nation in human history was about to be born from these people.
Right.
And yet, I think that if you're born in a rich family, you don't know how to appreciate what you have. You can't know. If you're Bill Gates' kid and your dad is literally the, I don't know if he is now, but the richest human in the world.
Right.
I won.
Right.
I'm the richest.
Right.
I can go buy 5 yachts out of the money in my pocket.
Right.
How do you teach
know what you have? Right.
How do you teach somebody to say, this isn't normal?
Lives.
This is incredibly rare what is happening here. You dug a cave and it ended up being a gold mine. You know, that it doesn't happen all the time. So gratefulness, thankfulness, appreciation for freedom, for liberty.
We have to teach this stuff.
You do.
Yeah.
Because if that's all you've known, you'll take it for granted and then you won't appreciate it and then it will begin to die.
Yeah.
Because it needs to be nurtured.
Yeah.
And it's not in America. And and God told me, Rebecca, or as I always called you, Becca Roo.
I love that. It's nice to hear it again.
Do you know why? Because it was a combination of kangaroo, because you're Australian.
Yes.
With Becca, which
I
don't
love
even know
it.
If you
I get
have
called
a nickname.
Beck. Beck is my nickname.
Okay.
Yes.
Beck?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
So I was prescient. I am even able to think ahead in a deeper.
You're prophetic.
Prophetic.
Yeah.
I knew.
Yeah.
But anyways, I guess what I was saying was, I just wanted to be a comedian.
Mm. Yeah, I wanted to kind of get to that. Like,
No, I got more. And it's like
from the beginning, he did, or you did mainstream comedy for a while.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
That's how I started on nightclubs.
So start back. You grew up in a Christian family, though. Like, your testimony just briefly, and then go into how you got into the comedy thing.
Well, testimony is kind of so my mom was much more Christian than my dad at that time. When I was young. And we did go to church. I remember going to church young. I even sang in church when I was little. My dad had a small combo, they called it, three piece, and that he would sing, and he was in community theater. So I kind of grew up, my grandmother played piano and she played in church. I had a cousin, I guess, that was actually in television in the 60s on, you know, Donna Reed shows or those older shows. So in some odd way, my family had a little connection to the arts.
Yeah.
We were in Indiana, so it was, you know, it wasn't New York or whatever.
Right.
But it wasn't foreign to me to think that art, artistry and or performance art couldn't be something you might want to be interested in.
Hmm.
But I didn't know it was going to be a comedian. And so when my dad moved from Indiana to California, when I was nine, I went to a little church in Orange, California.
Yeah.
And at Sunday school, if you'd like to accept Jesus as your savior, raise your hand. Okay, I'm in. I'll do that. That sounds like the thing to do. Interesting story, though. I'll just throw this out. I remember I'm 9 years old, accept Jesus as my savior. Okay. I don't even know if I told my parents that. I was kind of like, okay, well, that's what I did.
Yeah.
It was like we drew and then I got saved. but I remember this. For some reason, going home, the sky seemed bluer.
Yeah.
Something felt
different.
Something had happened to me existentially that a nine-year-old couldn't manufacture.
Yeah.
It was like something, I was experiencing something differently because I had found balance. I had found my creator. Now, obviously, I don't understand what that means at nine.
Right.
Anyways, and this is just a quick aside. It's more of a personal thing, but it was a beautiful thing for me. Many, many years later, my grandfather, who was a farmer in Indiana, I would go back and visit. And my sister, who was always a committed Christian, she's one of these people that has the gift of faith. That makes you sick.
It comes easier.
Yeah, just makes you ridiculous.
It seems
just,
to come easier.
You want to vomit. Like nothing phases. It's like, please,
just
have a crisis.
A sweetheart.
Like the rest
everything.
Of us. But anyways, that's so good for her.
Right.
But so she would always ask we'd get around and she'd ask my grandparents things and she'd always say, so how did you get saved? You know, she wanted to make sure they were in good shape or whatever.
Yeah.
But my grandfather, which I didn't know this because I can remember he was kind of a Christian. He said, you know, he was a farmer. So he was out in the field
with
his tractor. Some itinerant preacher stopped by the side of the road and went to the field and talked to Mudgy. He gets saved on the field.
Wow.
So he's down on his tractor. He gets saved from, you know, he's telling this story. I didn't know this.
I love it.
I was in my 30s, I guess, if I'm remembering. And he said, but you know what? Sky had never been bluer.
The
sun had never bright, and I remember when I heard that, it would go. I remember when I never thought about or remember that little moment of blueness. And my grandfather said this thing. It's like full circle. It's like, oh my gosh, this is how this works.
But you know what it is? It's love. Do you remember that early feeling? And my husband is the only person I've actually been in love with. I feel like I didn't fall in love before I met him.
Wow.
But when you experiencing that. Early love, the sky does look bluer, the trees look greener, like the world looks different. And I feel like that's what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
There was a love that had translated in that moment at nine that made the world look different.
I think so, but you know what, Rebecca, I have a feeling what we're really experiencing is for the first time, we understand we are loved.
Yeah.
I think it's really about, we think it's us loving them.
Right.
But you get to go around going, I'm loved.
Yes. Yes.
I am loved.
Yeah,
I got somebody that chose me.
That's right.
And it's an exciting thing.
And it's a euphoria.
So but it just.
Where did it go from there? Did it go from there?
Like, so I get saved, at nine but I remember always, I'm an autodidact. So I found this out later in life. So that means that I. Pretty much self-taught. I never went to college. Everything is books.
I didn't go to college either.
Read books over and over. Well,
okay.
That's clear. I don't think anybody questioned that. It's a joke. Got all the Caleb
You're
people.
You're a comedian.
Going. Yeah. They're all getting on the concordance. He can't make fun of Rebecca.
He's our favorite. He gets a pause because he's a comedian everywhere.
Right.
And we're friends.
And by the way,
and he calls me Beckaroo.
Yeah, and you can't judge me because you're Christians. So take that. Anyways, I remember walking to a Christian bookstore from my home. It was a few miles.
Yeah.
And I would walk on my own. I'm 12, maybe.
Yeah.
And buy literature.
And
buy Chick Tracks. I don't know if you had those.
Yeah.
I don't remember when you all moved. If you had Chick Tracks.
I was 14. I know what they are. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're pretty hard. They're amazing.
Yeah.
But they're like scary.
Hardcore.
Every time. You read a Chick Track and like, I want
to
get saved again because I'm going to hell somehow. And, but I would buy these and I had this deep desire to have deeper knowledge of God.
I love it.
And You can't manufacture that.
No, you can't.
It could be a calling.
It's
I don't know
hunger.
How that works.
Right.
Because I think God has a calling on every human's life to know him.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But we don't. Not everybody does. Not everybody chooses that. The power of autonomy and agency is that God gives you the ability to reason, to seek logic, to seek inductive and deductive reasoning. This is all a part of the attributes of God. He says, let's reason together. The only religion that said that the intellect is part of the experience of knowing God.
Mm.
But the power of freedom,
the
incredible volatility of freedom, that God has to say, I love you so much that you don't have to believe in me and you go to hell. That's crazy.
Mm.
Because you would think that I can't, you know, we want to tell our kids, it's your choice. You know, I'm trying to model it for you. I hope you come to this. I want you to be with you forever. But I can't demand something if you, God doesn't even demand.
Right, right.
But we kind of do. We kind of say, but you got to be a Christian because I can't, you got to go be with me. But we don't get that privilege any more than God does. But I'm just saying that is such a, it's more powerful than I think we give it credit for.
Mm.
God doesn't throw anyone to hell.
Yeah,
let's put it like that.
Right.
God throws in people. That's an atheist trope, right? Well, I don't believe in a God that would throw anybody into hell. Well, then great. Believe in the Christian God because he doesn't throw anybody into hell. He will move aside and allow you to walk in.
Right.
Because
but he allows
choice,
us to choose him.
But you
not
get
choose
to choose.
Him. That's true.
And so the rules have been made.
Yeah.
The game is already afoot. If you're listening to this, you're in the game. You can complain all you want, but you're in the game. So you got to play.
Yeah.
And he said, you're doomed. I have a way out. Here's the get out of jail free card. Just accept it. If you choose not to, that's a choice you've made.
I feel like all the things that you're talking about are like a big part of why I wanted you on this podcast because mad respect.
I thought it was my intelligence, my genius, like you like to call it, and of course my attractiveness.
Well, those two, and that you're very funny. But honestly, I feel like I've always thought about like the art of comedy and comedians that they actually have the hardest job in the world because you've got this audience sitting there. I've felt like I could never be a comedian, even though I go on stage and I put myself out there on a stage similar to a comedian. Mm. I couldn't just walk out with this room full of people that are sitting there like that going, make me laugh.
Right.
And it just feels so intimidating. So yeah. I've had mad respect for you and all comedians, but I love that you pair comedy with truth and that you use that art form to speak truth. Was there a time where you were like, no, I'm just going to do the comedy. I'm just going to make people laugh.
Yeah.
And then when did you switch over? Like, when did God give you the passion for the truth?
It's part of this, when we started with me getting saved or whatever, and I'm a kid and I'm trying to learn about God and whatever. And there's so much more and we don't have time to go through every part of my story. But what I can say is this. I didn't get into comedy thinking that I would be a Christian comic. That's for sure.
Okay.
I was always a Christian.
Right.
So I was in nightclubs, comedy clubs, the best clubs in the country, the improv.
Where were you?
Well, I was in California.
Okay.
So,
LA or?
Well, I was in Orange County. Okay. So South Orange County. Yeah. And so,
competitive market, I'm sure.
Yes, very much. And I started, I don't know if you know this, my first job in the performance arts, I was a close-up sleight-of-hand magician.
Magician, I did find that out in the research.
So
that's amazing.
I literally worked in private clubs that were magic oriented. One was called Magic Island. It was in Newport Beach.
Okay.
Probably been there. And then the Magic Castle, which is kind of a famous place up in Hollywood. And then, but a lot of restaurants and so forth. And I'd walk up to tables and do card tricks and whatever. And we called it close-up then. And now it's called Street Magic with David Blaine. So it was that kind of stuff where it's just kind of stuff close-up and whatever.
Yeah.
So that's how I started. And some of the best in the world were friends of mine because they were all in Southern California, people that if you were in that little subculture, you'd know.
Yes.
And so that's kind of how I found a foothold into how to actually be a performance artist.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was going to be a comedian. I did. That was not my, when I was young, I was going to be, first I was going to be a secret agent. Then I was going to be a stuntman.
Okay.
Then I was going to be a baseball player.
Okay.
But once I was kind of moving into the arts where I feel like this could happen, I wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
For sure. That made total sense to me. The magic was just interesting to me. Didn't know I was going to be a comedian, but I always was funny when I did my tricks. Just came out naturally to joke with, because you got to say something. You don't just sit there and say, pick a card. You got to have a little patter to go with, a little routine. So I would do that. And it was just funny. So I thought to myself, well, you know what I need? I need to make better money because this little close-up thing, it's kind of limited. Yeah. I need a stage show so I can make more money and give me more opportunities for revenue. So it was all about just business. It was just pragmatic. Well, comedy clubs exist. I said, you know, I could go into a comedy club and work there and be a comedy magician. And it gives me a place to make a living. So it really was very practical. Well, I get into clubs. And I'm a Christian, so I didn't curse. I didn't use sexual reference. All the things that have unfortunately become basically all comedy is now.
Yes.
Absurd.
It's so rare to find
it's
clean
ridiculous.
Comedy.
And it's so boring. Now, honestly.
It's cheap jokes,
it is.
Really.
And people in the arts, and you know, I don't know how to frame this. I think people in the arts do sometimes have a more intricate view of the nuances of how to communicate that maybe a layman doesn't. And I don't mean that to in any way demean those people or to think that I have more insight. But I do think that artists have a wiring that God's given us that maybe allows us to give a little bit more grace and a little bit more freedom to people to express themselves than the layman who is very cut and dried. Because we understand that there's a lot of nuance to communication and that it needs to be necessary and that we find this especially in films, in faith-based films, that they're very limited. The people that will go see a faith-based film, and I know I'm way off track, but I'm coming back. The people with a faith-based film that support it, that will show up, that will pay a ticket, that will give it, oftentimes have a very specific view of what Christianity is allowed to look like in the marketplace. You can have a bad guy, but there certainly is no cursing. Can't be drinking. Can't have a gun. Anything that would make them real, you can't have. How do you show redemption if you don't show sin? Now, notice what I didn't say. I didn't say sexual scenes that would
nothing
be more
gratuitous.
Graphic. It's not necessarily necessary.
Right.
Not even necessary.
Right.
We all know what's going on.
Right.
Just
right.
shut the door. We know what you're doing.
Right.
But when it comes to trying to show a gang member,
right.
when The Blind Side was done, which was not a faith-based film, though it was, but it wasn't done by faith-based people.
Right.
Lifeway would show it.
Yeah.
And somebody complained that I think there was a gun in it or something. Okay. You know, if they pulled it off the shelf, it's like, how do you... They're gang members.
Right.
They're not saying this isn't good. They're saying this is what it looks like when you're on this side of the fence. And, and it just bothers me that there's such a lack of sophistication in the Christian world in America. It just embarrasses me. I wonder if it's different in Australia because that isn't necessarily a Christian nation. Certainly wasn't founded that way.
Right.
So maybe if you're a Christian there, you're a little bit more hardcore about how you're able to engage the world.
I was 14 when I left, so I feel like I didn't probably have a grasp of all that. But I know growing up in Australia, I always valued authenticity and valued
The hypocrisy, right? Isn't that what they call it? Where they don't like people.
Tall poppy syndrome. You cut down people if they get too high.
Right.
Yeah, it's a thing. You can kind of look it up. But I definitely know I always valued authenticity, and I see that in you as well. I just kind of see this passion.
I hope so.
Can I share one thing that I want you to kind of speak about?
I never finish any question you give.
No, it's okay. It's all right. You're getting to so much truth in all these things. I love it. Oh, yeah. So we were, the way that we really got to know each other and kind of build on, you know, kind of meeting at this festival when I was a kid. Was doing this movie, Sarah's Choice.
Yeah.
So you're talking about movies and it made me think of it, but you had a scene in this movie that's about this pregnant girl. It was a pro-life film that I got to be a part of. Mm. And I played the lead role of an unmarried pregnant girl, which is very ironic because I've spoken about purity all my life.
Well, I used to joke with your brother about that. It's like, even
you
after
did?
You got married,
Joel?
I was talking to Joel after, you know, like a year later, I said, is she still a virgin? I'm just curious. Because you came across so pure. And that's beautiful. You know, that really is your countenance. It is truly how you are. But it almost seems funny.
It was ironic that I did this movie.
I hope she's enjoying herself now that she's married. She finally can jump into what God has ordained as okay now.
Exactly. But in this movie, I'm playing this pregnant woman who's having this baby outside of marriage and all of that. And so it was very ironic. But there was a scene where you challenged... The guy that played my boyfriend, you're challenging him in the movie to kind of step up and to marry my character.
Yeah.
And you were also talking about marriage, that a lot of people quit before they get to the great stuff. And you crafted that scene. Can you just speak to that? Because I think there was so much great stuff and so much encouragement in that.
Well, that's
but I'd love for you to get to it.
I appreciate that. So the scene, there was one scene in this film, and you all should see it. I mean, is it on Amazon? I don't even know where you can get it now. Is it on Amazon?
I believe
so. Go watch it called Sarah's Choice, and she does a great job, and it's a great pro-life film. But there was one scene in a bar. It was a dry bar.
But people are not watching this. They're just listening. His face is just going very.
But it was in a bar.
Very flat.
And I was talking to your boyfriend, and we got you pregnant, and you weren't married. And so
in this film, everybody, in the film, not in real life. Don't take that quote.
Exactly. And of course, there's a contemplation of abortion. I mean, that's the whole point. Maybe this needs to be, because that's the big thing, is that this is going to ruin your life. You're a woman. You need to, you got to be upwardly mobile. You can't be tied down by children.
Right.
And so forth. So that's the call. Well, anyways, I noticed that the guy didn't seem to have anywhere where he's held accountable, where he really is like, wait, what's your part of this?
In the movie,
what it should be expected of a man, because we are different.
Yeah.
Another shocking insight in this season in the world, where somehow even that is something that we need to question. But obviously, men and women are different, and how we see things and our emotional, intellectual elements. And so, I looked at this scene and I told these guys, the producer, I said, "This isn't enough. This is the only time he's held accountable. We need to add a little bit more substance to this thing." So I'll give it a try.
And
That I'm a screenwriter, but anyways, and that's what the point I was making. And this is something I learned. August will be 29 years for me. Marriage is that, and children is the greatest thing you'll ever experience, and is the hardest relationship you'll ever have in your life. It is so counterintuitive to the female male interaction, because we are so unique and
different. Right.
And the beautiful thing about marriage is it forces two diametrically opposed minds and bodies and how we connect. They say there's a beauty to it because you become one. You need each other to complete each other, because God said he made us in their image, which means he's male, female.
Yes.
But he separated us.
Yeah.
So he said, now I need you to come together, and only in that beautiful moment will another human exist. So God has literally given us God-like powers. Obviously, he has the ultimate powers. He still controls it. But we can make more people. And I've always seen that as unique, because a male is a unique individual, separate. Female is a unique individual, separate. He says when you come together, you're equal or one. You have a child, which is equal to both, but separate. So you have three separate entities that are also equal, which is the Trinity. So, on earth as it is in heaven, God has always given us shadows and clues. This is how this really is going to work in the big meta narrative. But I'm going to give you pieces of that puzzle down here. So that's really what is happening. Well, in the experience of marriage, it's expected to be sacred. There's a holiness to this that is lost nowadays. We forget what we use it as a ceremony, right? Without really getting the substance of it. Where do you usually get married? In a church. What is that representing? You're in a holy place. You have a pastor, usually, not always, but you do. What are they representing? Kind of God, kind of the overseer that says, I'm going to give you my blessing over this thing. When you have people watching that, they're our guests. Well, you actually call them witnesses, don't you? I'm witnessing what? An oath.
Yes,
covenant. A vow covenant to each other. We use this as just in frivolous terminology. It's not. I made a vow to you. I will never leave you until I die. Sounds beautiful until you have to live that thing.
Can I say, husband and I were just at a wedding in the last couple of weeks, which is it's so beautiful. Having waited so long till I was 33 to get married.
I was
now
32.
Going. Were you really? Yeah. Oh, that's awesome,
isn't it?
So to go to weddings now with my husband just feels so delightful, like just to experience this. And I'm crying in the wedding. But I said to him after, I said, I feel like we knew when we got married that this was a huge decision. It was probably the biggest decision of our life outside of committing to Jesus.
Of course.
So we knew the weightiness of it, and we did premarital counseling, the whole thing. But I feel like you only really know it when you're in it for a while, you know, how weighty it is, how huge it is, how you're in everything together. You are, you are laying down your life, ideally, for that person every single day and submitting to God for the help that you need to be one and to maintain oneness, because it is challenging.
It is.
My parents, who have probably the best marriage I've ever seen, while also not perfect, you know, I see the not perfect too, they will say it's hard, but it's the best thing. I mean, similar to what you said, marriage and children are most delightful and beautiful things, but they're also challenging. And they knock out selfishness out of us, and they challenge our selfishness.
And if they don't, you're not going to survive, because that's really what God is saying.
Right.
Is I'm going to use this to hone you into what you can't get any other way.
Right.
I'm going to take the opposite, the other in some odd way, but also the equal.
Yeah.
Because we're male, female.
Yeah.
Man, woe, man. So there's this unique difference, but sort of sameness.
Yeah.
And you're going to need each other to complete each other, but you're also going to see the conflict that comes with that, because we're just like spirit and flesh, right?
Well, and we're iron sharpening iron, and that hurts.
It does.
Right? Like the refining process hurts, but it's also good. And it's a holiness, holiness that is encouraged in a godly marriage.
But also in a way that has the specialness that you can't get with the same sex. It's easy for a man to sort of hone each other in male nomenclature, you
know,
I don't have to explain to you stuff because we're guys, so
you get
it, and women
other.
Have certain insights that they don't have to explain. And that's also honing.
But not
but
in the way that
it doesn't do the work
female.
It does when you go against this person that you feel like you're crazy. You don't even understand what I'm talking. No, I don't. So we got to figure that out. But that's what this scene was about.
It was very, very powerful. Very powerful. And I know it now after being married 10 years. I know what you were talking about in that scene.
Right.
I was moved by it. Probably moved to tears every time I would watch that scene because I think it's one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful scene in the movie.
Well, that's sweet. But again, if so, that would be because God had something to say, and he just used me to do it. It could have been anybody. I didn't make it up. It's the reality that exists. I just gave voice to it.
Yeah.
But what I have discovered, it's not a revelation. It's just a truth that we just need to tune into and re-remind each other, is that people get divorced over the very things that were designed to teach them how to stay married.
Okay. Unpack that a little bit.
What do we get divorced over? Oh, I don't love you anymore. Or I don't like it when you do this. Or this doesn't work for me anymore. And it's like all of those things that have caused you friction, that have caused you conflict, that has caused you, most importantly, even if you don't see it, to have to look at yourself and see really who
you
actually
are. It's a mirror. Marriage is a mirror.
And where you're unable to go to that space because you got to feel something you don't want to feel.
Yeah.
And you get angry about that because anger is pain internalized. Whenever you come across a real angry, they're in pain. Something is wrong and they can't get it fixed.
Yeah.
And marriage exposes it all.
Yeah.
It exposes the worst of us, the best.
An intimate marriage. I think you can coexist.
Right. If you're trying to make it legit.
Right.
There's a cost.
Yeah, right.
The church is the bride.
Yes.
There's always these, it's not even metaphors.
Yeah.
He's saying to us, this is how this really works.
Yeah.
This is, your marriage is actually supposed to be a representation of the spiritual dimension you're about to enter into for eternity.
Yeah.
And this is just a foreshadowing.
Yeah.
I don't want to be responsible. I can't be Jesus, but I'm supposed to be Jesus. When Jesus left, he said, it's your turn. You get to be me now. I was like, what?
Yeah.
I'm no good at this. So the scene to me was saying to people once and for all, when the conflict comes, when the pain comes, when the moment where you, and it happens in many, maybe not in yours, I don't know, but in most marriages, there are moments where you go, man, maybe I screwed up. Maybe I shouldn't have been with them. Maybe this was a mistake. You know, maybe it's a fleeting moment, right? Or maybe you're in trouble. Marriages are going through suffering.
Right.
And God would say, this is the schoolroom now. This is the problem. I remember I had the insight for some reason. I would always ask older people that had been married a long time.
Yeah.
When I was young, I'd always knew there was wisdom there. And I'd say to them, how did you do it? And you see these people married 50 years, still holding hands, you're going.
Yeah.
And I was single. I enjoyed dating people. I enjoyed kind of being free because there's no commitment. There's no responsibility. There's
not a mirror.
At stake.
Yes.
Right? It's easy to walk away. But once you commit, there's no way out if you're serious.
Right.
And I did tell my wife that. I said, listen, divorce is not an option.
We said that to each other before marriage.
Just to let you know.
It's no plan B.
I came from divorce.
Right.
I'm never going to do to my kids what happened to me. So before you jump in, this is the rules.
No plan B.
Well, that's beautiful because it does force you to, but it's really hard because suddenly you realize I don't get to take an easy
There's no way out.
So I realized that when you get to those real moments of truth where it feels almost like, I think this might be too much for me, that's the moment of growth. That's where you have to sacrifice that. If you're Christ followers, if you were, if that's a bigger identity, that's the ultimate identity than anything else, you actually have something to learn right now. So when the old people, I would ask, what made it work? And there might be a different way they frame it, but virtually everyone said the same thing. And it sounds so simple. They said, takes work. That was the phrase. It takes work.
I'm 21 years old. My parents said the same thing.
I'm 21. I'm writing. Oh, okay. I'll remember. It takes work. That's a good, takes work. Get married. It's great in the beginning. First week or two. This, what was I waiting for? This is amazing.
Or even the first year or two. Yeah, I think for us, the first couple years.
Of course,
But then it hits, you know,
and because
stuff hits
new
the fan at a certain point.
Fun,
it's challenging.
And then suddenly reality hits. But I remember this. I was with my wife, loved each other together. This is great. It's amazing. And we had our first kind of major blow up. And I remember kind of off on my own and just going, man, I don't know. I didn't see this coming. Maybe this is a mistake. Maybe I got the wrong, but you know, you get this crazy stuff in your head because you're dealing with something you've never dealt with before. You're in a place that
you didn't see
necessarily would have chosen. Single guy can walk away. I don't have to go into that land.
Right.
I can go over here.
Right.
I'm here now. I got nowhere to go. And I'll never forget. It was like the blue sky. And I go,
this is the work.
This is not this. This is what you meant? Oh my. So it was simple in its phraseology.
Yeah. But profound.
But what it meant, the cost of your ego, your pride, your demand for justice to be to be respected,
validated.
To be validated, to be, and suddenly you go, but you know what, Rebecca? Give me any other scenario in your life that causes you to reach that kind of place where you have to experience things like that. Nothing else can do it. Your parents can't do it, and you have that. It's intimate.
A friendship
your,
can't
your
do
friendship
it.
Can't do it, and that's intimate. Your siblings can't do it, and that's intimate.
Kids, huh?
That marriage is the only place this lesson can be learned, and it's hard.
But what you said also in that scene that was so profound is you said a lot of people quit before they get to the great stuff.
Yes.
A lot of people give up before they get to the great.
Because
and you
the great,
said to that character, hang on for the great.
Yeah,
commit to the great.
Yes.
Dive in on the hard work because you want to get to the great. And
but,
you will get to the great if you commit to the work.
But the narcissism of America right now is the great stuff is supposed to come without a cost. And it doesn't.
And it doesn't.
Nothing of value comes easy.
Yeah, it's true.
Nothing.
It's true.
And you always grow more from pain than pleasure.
Yep.
Always.
Yeah.
Listen, when something painful happens to you that forces you to have to change, be redeemed, and be and re-examine how you're going to move forward in life, that's where the true growth comes. That doesn't mean you don't pray for good days and vacation days and whatever. But the truth is, if be grateful for those moments.
Yeah.
It's a respite.
Yeah.
Where you go, we're sitting on the beach and Hawaii, and we're watching that, and that's a beautiful
enjoy those
thing.
Moments.
Be grateful and glad for that.
Yeah.
That's not where you learn.
Right.
That's not where you grow.
Right.
And frankly, Rebecca, it's barely the stories you tell in as life goes on.
Yes.
The stories you tell are, remember that time we were going there and we got in that rainstorm, we ended up in the ditch and the thing came off. We thought there's no way. Those are the stories you embrace.
It's the epic.
That's what matters.
It's the epic.
Not because, the beach.
Yes. Yeah,
it's the
movie moments, Brad.
Yes.
It's the movie moments. Why are always movies having these huge blow-ups, like this huge crescendo of pain and angst, and they hit this wall and they can't, and they have to push through. The hero has to push through.
Yeah.
It's what life is actually made of.
Yes.
It's what passion is made of. So thank you for bringing that up.
But what you just said, the hero, we all want to be the hero. Right?
Without the cost of being the hero.
Everybody watches the relationship. The ultimate story of all time, I mean, it's obviously God and his creation, but ultimately it's male-female. It's the relationships between a man and a woman is the biggest, longest told story in history, right? Because it's the big conflict that we live in. We all love to see, and they lived happily ever after. You get married, to live happily ever after. What you don't see when they ride off on the horse is what it took to stay married. You never see that.
Right.
So you think, well, I guess once we fell in love, this happens on its own. And it doesn't. Love.
Right. It requires commitment.
Without effort.
Yeah.
You have to do something. Yeah. Isn't that what our faith teaches? That love that says, God says, I am love. I don't distribute love.
Yeah.
It's my essence.
Yeah.
That's what Jesus is.
Yeah.
The greatest love he gave to us, his redemption, came with sacrifice.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, he modeled it. Oh, he modeled it in the ultimate way.
In a way that is unfathomable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfathomable, because we forget that God is perfect and he became his creation, which was not unperfect. So think about the demeaning element of what he would be like. It'd be like if we invent a little toy and we become like the toy. It's just it's absurd.
Right.
Christianity is either the biggest nonsense in history or it's the most miraculous thing, because it's so absurd what God did. He could have started over.
Yeah.
Right. He screwed up, I'll make another batch until it works.
Yeah.
He said, no, this is what love is. I committed to this. I'm coming in.
Yeah.
Again, we tell the story without taking the depth of it and really sitting in that.
Yeah.
Seeing how blue the sky actually is.
Totally. We've just got just a couple minutes left before we need to wrap
up.
It's
amazing.
It's gone really, really fast.
Your viewers are probably weeping. They're taking notes.
Just a couple more minutes. I want to make sure that people listening are hearing that for all of us, we need the grace of God. We need the forgiveness of God, because none of us are doing this perfect. None of us have it figured out. And to those that have struggled with the pain of divorce or the pain of somebody rejecting you or the pain of some kind of devastating hurt in a relationship, just know the grace of God. We are desperate for it. Every single believer is desperate for it. And so there's no perfect here. There's no, if you hear that there's some kind of like perfection that is being held up through this podcast, then you're hearing wrong, because we all need the grace of God and the forgiveness of God. And we need to be clinging to him daily for what we need in every relationship, in every area of life. So just hear that loud and clear. In a second, I'm going to ask you, Brad, just to pray a covering prayer over those that are listening that just are hurting right now and need encouragement in their marriage, in their key relationships, in their life. Maybe a lot of people in recent life have felt very alone and very isolated and depressed.
Yeah.
You know, struggling with tremendous anxiety. You are in a ministry that offers joy to people. And that's part of what I love about what you do, is you offer joy and laughter that's disarming. Mm. And then you can get into the truth and people's hearts
exactly
are open. Yeah.
As you bring down the presuppositions, we all have filters.
Yeah.
When we hear things we don't want to hear, we filter through that and we don't have to deal with it.
Right.
And comedy kind of breaks that down. It makes us all kind of human.
Yeah.
The next thing you know, a truth is, but that's my ministry. It's not what every comic does.
Right.
It was how I became, and I guess we don't have time for that. Maybe we can talk another day.
Yeah.
But that's what happened to me, is God said, this is,
I want you to offer more.
God said, your gift isn't comedy.
Yeah.
What? It's not. He said, no, your gift is communication.
Mm.
You laymanize deep ideas so that people can receive it. The package it comes in, the flavor is comedy.
I love
But that's not the purpose. Well, I had to learn that kicking and screaming. It actually, it's another episode.
Okay.
But
can you just in a minute or so, and it's hard to get to, you know, great truth in a minute or so, but can you just encourage that person that maybe sometimes going out on stage, you're like, oh, I'm meant to make people laugh and I'm meant to bring joy. That's what they're here for, but I'm not feeling it myself. Mm. What have you done in those moments in your relationship with God to receive what you need to give in those moments?
Well, what I had to learn was, one is more of my personal calling. I believe God, it's weird to say, but it's true. He said, I'm calling you to the church to be more of a prophet to the church.
Mm-hmm.
I have things for you to say to my people. Not I'm not an evangelist.
Yeah.
Not that I don't believe people should get saved or do. He said, I want you to go to my people who think they're connected and they're in good shape, and let them know you're not.
Mm.
The expectation of discipline for Christianity is simply not demanded by American Christianity. And it's not, and it's killing us. Because if you're really doing Christianity, it's not safe. It's always dangerous.
Right.
It comes with a war. It comes with a price.
Yep. Enemies out to get us.
And you have to be willing to die for or this faith. And we think of that in a metaphor, and God said, I'm very serious.
Right.
This
right.
isn't the life you're supposed to embrace. You can yeah. be grateful for it, and we're not supposed to deny our physical world. He gave it to us.
Right.
It was a gift to us too.
Yeah.
I'm not one of these sell everything, go get up on a mountain and wait for God to come back. No, you got work to do.
Yeah.
So love this physical world, but the ultimate calling of what you're called to be, which is to know me and to share me. That's the meaning of, you want to know the meaning of life? Know God and tell people. That's the meaning of life. How you do that is your vocation, it's your skill set, it's whatever. So we got talking a lot about marriage, you know, and let me tell you this. If you got a great marriage, if you really don't have a lot of conflict, if you really feel like things have gone really smooth for you, first off, you're rare, but good for you. Good for you. And let me tell you what you get to do with that. You better be mentoring everybody you get in front of, because that's your role. If you were given that kind of amazing conflict-free marriage, then go share that with others. Mm. That's your calling. You don't get to just go rest in that. You got business to do. But for most of us, it's hard. For most of us, some of you watching might say, you know, he doesn't love me anymore. She doesn't want to be with me anymore. Or it got too hard. Or just, we said that things were said that can't be taken back and whatever. Well, this is the hard stuff. Beauty is there.
Mm.
Redemption is there. The happily ever after is there. But it's always on the other side of the hard stuff.
Yeah. That's the great is there. On the other side.
You don't get to the victory. You don't get to Oz without going through the poppies that put you to sleep, without going through the witch. You don't get there. That's part of the journey. And let me tell you something. When something is hard to get to, you appreciate it when you arrive.
Oh, yes.
That's what this is for. So if you're going through a marriage challenge right now, and it's really a challenge, if you're the one that's really wanting to make this fix and you feel like the other one's checked out, that's hard. You can't make them join you. But if you will trust God and say, Lord, I'm in it for the long haul, and I will commit to this until it's over, until somebody walks away where you have no choice, there's hope.
Yeah.
Never give up.
Yeah.
And fight the battle. Matter of fact, I'm going to pray for you. Father, I thank you that you did the ultimate sacrifice. Mm. You became something so much less than yourself.
Mm.
Something that was incalculably beneath your spirit, your knowledge, everything that you are is the greatest there ever was.
Mm.
So we can't even imagine what it is to be like us. And you created us exactly where we're supposed to be in relationship with you. So whatever seems to be missing, whatever seems to keep us from knowing you in the deeper ways, apparently is about as close as we could get, because you know how close we're able to get to you. You created us.
Mm.
So Father, I thank you for Rebecca, who has lived a life of virtue. She didn't talk about it, she lived it. And that's what gives it weight. And that's what gives it strength. And I know she's helped many people with her life and trying to live integrity. And I know she'd say, hey, I make mistakes, I'm not perfect. But it doesn't matter. She's tried to be that offering to others so that they could see it modeled the best she could, so they would have hope. So for those who are hurting right now, whose marriages are on the sea and the waves are high, I ask that you would give them the desire to seek what they got married for in the first place. When they first got married, they loved each other. They wanted to be together. They wanted to make a happily ever after. And now they're learning how hard that is. But that's what makes it valuable, is getting on the other side of the waves and the storm, landing on dry land and say, look, we did it. We told each other we'd do it, and we made it. And that's what makes it beautiful. Father, give them a miraculous, redemptive return to their first love, starting with you, but also with each other, because it is a spiritual journey, and marriage is modeling what you have done for us. I pray that you will... We'll see miracles take place.
Lord,
just from this ridiculous little podcast with a comedian and a singer who are on the same journey with the same flaw, but we are throwing breadcrumbs along the way for us to follow. Try to follow us. We have been through some of these places. Follow us. We've blazed that trail. Give them hope. And most importantly, Father, give them victory that they can even speak about or write on these, if there's a thread that they can write or comment, so others can get hope through somebody else's experience.
Lord.
let their sacrifice, their crucifixion, bring a redemption, a revival of coming back from the dead so they can use their painful experience to heal others. That's how you do it. You trust us with the pain so that when we come through it, we will heal others. In Jesus' name.
In Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you, my friend.
I thank you for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. This is great, and hopefully we'll do it some more. I'd love to talk to you some more.
God bless you. Thank you so much.